Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast. Jordan Bell's third. Jordan Bell's third. Yo, yo. Jordan Bell third, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the molly and I think it's be my third. Jordan Bell third, Jordan Bell third. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Bell third. Jordan Bell third, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Bell third. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Ken and Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Travelers Championship. As usual, we are here with my favorite Canadian, a Canadian pit bull, Tyler Tambolin. Tyler, what is up, my friend? I know you were feeling a little bit of pain this week. I thought I was feeling pain from tilting Sunday at the U.S. Open on DK, but I don't think I'm tilting it as hard as you were. How are brother?
I'm doing well. It's part of the game, man. It's all fun. We all do the same thing every week. We go after it. That's not the first time it's happened. It probably won't be the last. It's an extremely tough tournament to close these Millie Makers. I was happy with the results. Like as far as, you know, the process and putting it in and making it happen. Like I did what I could to get there. And my buddy Bucks, man, big Bucks, no whammy, said it today. He said, got to be close to close. And that's all you can do, right? Is put yourself in the position to get lucky. That's how I always feel about it. Obviously they're tough. I got 23rd in the $100 Millie Maker and I had a different lineup get 31st in the $10 Millie. I kind of wish they were flipped because it would have been like $13,000 more. And then I also wish, to your point that you posted on Twitter, that Rory McIlroy would have just made anything down the stretch and not had that double bogey and not had a few other things. And then Kawa too. Like I always play the, what I call and have coined, the Rory Kawa lineups, where you play Rory McIlroy and Morikawa together because they both can just go off and they're usually priced the way they've been, you know, the way they're seen or priced in against these types of fields, especially in the U.S. Open with all these bombers. They were priced a little bit under 9,900 for Rory, 9,500 for Kawa. I pretty much love that combo, but we'll talk about it. We're going to hop right into it anyway. Before we get into it, Kenny, I just want to remind everyone quick, we're brought to you and presented by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself 10 bucks off the first month. Still got a lot going on there. And if you buy the monthly, right now, it's going to lead right up to the Open, which will be the next chance to go after these crazy Millie Makers that are. So how was your week, Kenny? And what do you want to talk about here first?
Let's talk about Rom first. Before we get into all our stuff, let's talk about the winner of this past week. What a performance by John Rahm. I mean, those two birdies on 17 and 18, those are some of the clutchest shits I've seen in a long time. He took a little flack for, you know, all that bunker shot on 18 going away from the hole. But goddamn, that was smart. I mean, you know, I would have just sculled that shit into the fucking water and lost the tournament. You know, I mean, you know, the pressure's on, you know, his hands are sweaty. You know, anything can happen on a type of bunker shot. And that green leads away right towards the water, right behind that flag stick, the way his angle was. And he just drains the pot. I mean, he's done that before at the Farmers, making that like 855 footer. He made to win his first championship there from the back of the green, which was incredible. I mean, he's good these last putts on 18. What did he have? One against in the BMW Championship. He made that crazy putt to win that a couple of years ago. You know, deserved number one player in the world. And if you look back at a little bit of his numbers, pretty amazing stuff. I mean, we all saw this coming. You know, because he's one of the most talented golfers in the world. But if you look back in his last 3 years, he has a 62% top 10 percentage. 62% top 10 percentage. 25% top 3 percentage. More wins than missed cuts in his career. I mean, damn. That's pretty freaking good. You know, I mean, those numbers right there are incredibly solid. He did get a little bit lucky. What was it, the drive on 9 or 10? You know, at first I thought it was OB, but there was like two fences. And like he hit like the blue fence like that was right before the OB stake, and like that was blocking like some type of like merchandise stand or something like that. And you know, I got a little bit lucky there, but you need luck when you win a major championship. We say that every year. There's always at least one or two lucky plays when it comes down to get that miraculous chip on that one par three where he hit it down into that gully and just got it right up on the fringe and made that par. But what a performance by John Rahm. I mean, I could see him being number one for a while. I mean, we'll see how it goes. If Dustin Johnson wins this week, I think he's number one again. So I don't know. I'm sorry. Maybe he won't be over for a while, because I think the last time John Rahm was number one, he was number one for a week. This is the second time being number one. He's been number one in the world for 1 week. Other than that, what a leaderboard. Going down, up and down the board. Bryson was in it. Rory was in it. Koepka was in it. Cantley was there for a little bit. Xander was there for a little bit. DJ was there for a little bit. I mean, you can't beat that. It was so exciting going down the stretch. It made Sunday night great. The West Coast Major is always great for me, at least living on the East Coast. You get that prime time golf. Which is nice, and it was fun to watch. What would you think of the event?
Oh, incredible. Overall, as far as Rahm goes, like you said, just, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. I took a little flack on, like I said, where you mentioned just now with the top 10 stats. As I said, it's hard to bet him, right? Like he was top 10, like locked in machine, but his number was always the favorite. And even this term, he was the favorite. I know some people definitely had him out there this week, and I'm happy for them. I'm happy for Rahm. I think it's tough. We needed him to close the door on this big one. It was no surprise it was coming. And sure enough, it did. And this spot made just too much sense, right? You saw what had happened at the Memorial, just the, you know, most talk about being unlucky for a minute there. You know, you got to be good to be lucky. That's how he got here this time, like you mentioned. But he was definitely unlucky at the Memorial. I think he would have easily closed that thing out, but you never know. But 6 strokes lead after three rounds is pretty simple, I think, for him, the way he plays. And then he showed it off again here. And for it to be the scene of his first PGA Tour win, the scene of where he got engaged, the first Father's Day for him that, you know, he celebrates in America. He mentioned that, you know, Spain is actually a different Father's Day. So it wasn't that same narrative I posted at the start of the week. Rahm or Rory, I said, it's, you know, who's going to win this Father's Day tournament. And certainly it was Rahm in the end. So just awesome to see for a spot to get his first major. He spoke incredibly about it at the end, just everything that the way he framed it up. His mindset is just on point right now, not to mention the skill set that he has. But when you've got the mental game lined up like that, it's going to be good things. He just didn't let that thing bother him. Even if he did inside, the guy's been taking a lot of flack in the past for being an extremely fiery dude. And you love to see that when he shows off that emotion. Someone said that on 18, that fist pump and everything that he was doing. Guido, by the way, had some pretty nice fist pumps. But the John Rahm one on 18, they said was like Tiger-esque. From back in 08. So it was kind of like the same scene, everything set up there that you just perfect way to end the event. The bunker shot just shows, get back to that mental side. He was totally okay with putting it out there. There's no chance he's going at that water. Could he have got a little closer? Maybe, but he has to trust himself and imagine the confidence coming off that putt on 17. So had to do it. Love the result. It's good for him. Like you said, though, and this is where I want to flip it right now. Can you get your opinion on this? Because all the talk all week about Torrey Pines and the venue and not being good enough, man. Like I can't even think of a good analogy, and I usually can, but all I'm saying is sometimes you got a nice piece of pizza and you're just eating it. I don't really care if I got a mountain view or an oceanside property eating the pizza. I just like the fucking pizza. This tournament gave us what we wanted, a great leaderboard, an awesome event. Everyone was in the mix. Like you said, I know a lot of guys got to the top and then fell back, the Bryson blow up, but man, there was so much going on in that final round. You were on the edge of your seat. And then Louis, everyone expects him to choke it. Of course he did, but but I'm just saying it, like they gave him no shot, but it was just so funny that, you know, on 16, I thought it was going to be on 16. You know, Baroff had actually texted me. He said, here's where Louis blows it. Here's the bogey coming up on 16. And then he didn't. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. The driver has been on all week as it always is. And then he blows the thing on 17 like that. I just, oh man, one of those things. That's Louis. I think it's harder to come in second that many times exactly than it is to friggin' win your second major for him, because this is just incredible. But overall, man, I thought just an incredible event. And I honestly couldn't care about the setting or the fact that Torrey Pines was maybe not the best, or this could have been better if it was on another course. I don't care. It played out incredibly, and I loved it.
I mean, we get the beautiful courses. We get the Open Championship every year. We get Augusta every year. I mean, this is a long course, a difficult course. Not every course is to be like spectacularly pretty and visually stunning. It doesn't need to be that. It just needs to play tough. It just needs to play tough, and yeah, especially U.S. Open, create a little more like it did today, like yesterday. I was fine with it. I got no problem playing a Torrey. I think it'll probably be back in the next 10 years, probably 2030 plus. We'll see it again because, I mean, look at the winners here. Took the Tiger and freaking and Rahm, both number one players in the world. You know, Rahm after the week, but still, I mean, it was great to watch. And South Africans on the 17th and 18th hole, man, I mean, Brandon Grace and, of course, Louis, like, you know, 16 different times in his career at majors. So, yeah, that was tough. Going back to Rahm just a little bit, on the betting perspective, I don't know if it was an automatic bet. I mean, like, you think about it. Like, the thing about it is, you know, in big-time events, he hasn't really contended, backdooring all his top 10s. Like, if you look at his last four majors, he shot 23 under par on total combined in the last four majors played this season. He shot 15 under on Sundays combined. 15 under on Sundays combined. So a lot of it was backdooring top 10s. You know, he had to lead the players a couple years ago, blew that. So I wouldn't say it was like a must bet and we missed out and we all should have seen it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's what I've always been saying. Like, it's like you look at it and we're not trying to say like he's a bad bet. It's just tough to get. Like, I don't care that I missed it. I'm not like, oh man, I knew Rahm was going to win this thing. I should have bet him at 10 to 1. Who cares? Like, I don't care. I'm happy for the game of golf. I'm happy the way the result landed. It was still a fun event, is all I'm saying. And I don't care that I missed the boat on that.
I think he's going to slingshot him into being in contention more and more in these big time events, though, in the four majors and the Players. I think you're going to see him in contention on Sunday a lot more. You really haven't seen it prior to yesterday. But the thing is, like I said, in the numbers that I gave before, he's consistently good. Yeah. And his wins, you know, he has a bunch of wins. It's not like he's not winning. They just haven't come at, you know, these marquee events. But still, it was great. And then the crumbling on the back nine was another great part of the course. I mean, you look at it, Bryson shot 44. He was in a lead on the ninth hole.
Wow.
You know, I think by himself. Yeah. He was in the lead in the ninth hole by himself. His shot shoots 44 on the back. You got Rory missing 10 footers, five putts inside 10 feet on the back. He makes one of those, and I hit my cash line up, and I'm still bitter about that. You win, you know, tens of thousands of more dollars. I win like, you know, $400 more, $500 more, you know, but still, it's a good amount for me. You saw, you know, Kawa with the double, DJ Fade earlier in the round. Xander, what the hell was Xander doing?
As soon as he sees his name up there, man, everyone called it. As soon as he saw his name up top, it was like,
it's
I got
not
a
just
chance?
That. It's not just that. He was like top 10 in strokes game putting, and he changes his stroke, and he loses almost two strokes putting for the week. I mean, like, why?
And he's still, by the way, what's the record now? Isn't that five top 10s at the U.S. Open?
Yes. Something like that. Dude, you got to play him. I mean, what was he, like $9,200?
By the way, the chalk absolutely smashed this week. Louis was chalk. Xander was chalk. Casey was chalk. Morikawa was chalk. Rahm, of the guys at the top, was owned. Like, there was still a lot of guys in this mix.
The reason why I had a chance at cash, because Rory was less than 5% owned in most cash games and most double ups.
It makes sense.
So that's why, because I had 4-6 in cash. You know, in the beginning of the week, I had Rogers penciled in as my final cash game cornerstone. And I switched to Steele by the time the pod ended, by the time the pod started, which, you know, I played Rogers, I would have cashed easy. Another reason why I'm tilting again. Maybe I'll go with your first instinct, I guess, every time. A great event. It was a lot of fun to watch. And now, you know, you normally go to the next week and, you know, you get like some shitty field. And, you know, we get a Pete Dye course and we get a pretty decent field coming up this week. Like, maybe another Brooks Bryson battle. Maybe the guys in Connecticut will have enough balls to play them together this week for the first couple of days. So we'll see how that goes.
Real quick on that, because you know, just a note of the Bryson jumping up, waving. Remember, so that was
funny. That was hilarious.
It was, yeah, and it was. I was going to say,
funny.
The back and forth was amazing. If you're Brooks and you see Bryson just crushing on Sunday at first, and you're like, oh, damn, he's going to beat me in this tournament after I thought I had him. And then you get to see him blow up on the back like he did. That had to be something. But one note is I forget the guy. I can't remember. I don't want to say. So anyway, they interviewed Bryson, and basically Bryson said there's going to be like a culmination of this event or of this, you know, back and forth coming soon. I'm actually wondering, I don't know if it's Pip related or what they're going to do, but I do think that there's a possibility that we could see them paired together this week, and it may have been a little bit orchestrated just to make the fans and bring the fun into it, whatever, and kind of just put an end to it too, so they can move past it. But it does, yeah. He did hint at something coming up where they're going to, you know, sort of be together on that. And then lastly, by the way, the Stella Artois box beside his ball. Do you know what I mean? That couldn't have been better.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch better than and then the fucking tree for Mackenzie Hughes, your Canadian brethren. I mean, how the hell did that shit was so wild because it bounced, like it hit the tree, came down, bounced on a cart path, came back up, and then got stuck in a tree. I mean, that shit was too fucking wild. The one thing about Bryce, I sort of like this comment at the end, talking about, you know, how are you going to get past this, blah, blah, blah. He's like, man, I already won this shit once. Fuck it, I'm good. I love that. I thought that was great. You know, personally for me, I was like, I know people hate Bryson, but I was like, man, that's the fucking answer. He's like, I already did this shit. We're good. I'm going to move past it, and we're going to fucking play next week. And I'm on him this week. I want him to play with Brooks, and I want him to whoop his ass. And it please happen if you're right. I mean, that would be so funny because I am on some Bryson this week, buddy. All right. So let's get to one more time. Fuck you, Rory. And then, yes. God, I love God. The thing about Rory is I'm not the biggest fan of him. I know people love him. I don't know. I just never really been. It could be a Ryder Cup thing for me. You know, just because, you know, he just whoops our ass every time. And I don't know. That could be the thing. And I like Patrick Reed, the whole Patrick Reed, Rory, you know, that match was so great. And, you know, I pinned Rory as the villain. And maybe that's why my eyes are a little bit skewed. I always get the E-Pat, Eric Patterson with this, at E-Pat Golf on Twitter, talking about, you know, he's always a Rory nut. Like, he loves him. And I guess he's Canadian too. So I guess that Ryder Cup thing doesn't come into play like it does for me.
Right.
So I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not the biggest Rory fan as a golfer, but I mean, I'll play the fuck out of him and bet him when I can.
Yeah. I do like Rory. I don't know if it's because I'm Canadian, but I do just like Rory in general, because I just think the other side of him is that how often he speaks his actual mind, which most guys won't, like to come out and say that stuff about how Bryson changed his swing in a way where he had to think about it differently, and how he'll be so brutally honest about everything. I think he's really good for the game. And you always want to have that sort of spokesperson from someone who's a true professional. And that's what Rory is to me. So you got to have a lot of respect for the guy too, his game and everything that he does. So I don't know. Some people were degenerate. Some people just say, fuck Rory, who cares? And we will after this weekend. I'll definitely say that for yesterday's results, but I won't forgive that.
But at the Open Championship, he's like $9,400. I'm going to roster the fuck out of him.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what's going to happen. I mean, you think about last week. I mean, Koepka 20-1, Rory 20-1, or Rahm 10-1. You bet both those guys, you can spend the same amount of money and have a chance to win. The same, you know, you have a 100 chance better the win. I mean, I just thought that was the right move, you know.
And Rory was the first one to let that narrative down, too. If you remember when Brooks at Waste Management, that number was just an auto bet. What was he, 40-1 or something stupid? And everyone's like, I don't care what his health is, you just bet it. The same thing with JT at the Players, 20-1. The whole world had the ticket because why wouldn't you? It's JT at 20-1. Like, how often in that spot? And now this one was Rory and Koepka 20-1.
And Koepka 20-1. You had to lay it down on him.
We're betting. That's what I'm saying. But then when you started to see the rush on Saturday from Rory, you're like, oh, yeah, I could already sense a little bit. Maybe that was my negative attitude. I need to Rahm up. Right? Rambo, Tambo, we'll do whatever. I got to get his mindset and not be so down on my guy, because I really felt like Rory was going to crash on Sunday anyway, just because of the run and the fact that everybody was holding tickets.
He was great on the front nine. Just fucking, he couldn't do nothing on the back. God damn it. That shit still is pissing me off right now.
Listener League. We got to get our minds off this.
All right. So let's get to the Listener League for the week. The winner was Square Grouper. I love grouper. Have you ever eaten grouper? It is delicious, meaty, flaky fish. One of my favorites out there. Anyways, Square Grouper. No butterfish. I can't. You know what? I actually had a little bit more the other day. If you ever go to like sushi joints and you get the white tuna, that's butterfish. And the thing about it, it's so delicious. Just don't eat like 10 ounces of it, okay? I ate like 3 pieces. It was recently. I went out with a chick. And I had like three pieces. Of course, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I went out with the chicken, ate butterfish again. But I was like, man, this is fucking delicious. You know what I'm saying? I got to try it again. She wanted sushi. And I was like, man, that shit looks so fucking good. We got this whole, you know, sashimi nigiri platter. It was like, you know, $120. This massive, like, spread of fucking raw fish. And I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna have a little bit. And she had some. So, I mean, if we both shit our pants, it would be fine, right? You know, it'd be a great story to tell at a wedding and shit like that, right? So I felt a little bit more safe because when she took that first piece of butterfish, I was like, I didn't, of course, I'm not going to tell her about what the fuck happened because I want that shit to happen to a girl when I'm with her, just to have, like, you know, like redemption.
Full redemption.
You know what I'm saying? Redemption. Oh, one more thing. I was going to tell you the story before we get into this. It's a traveler's week. We can bullshit for a little bit longer. Just fast forward. If you don't want to hear this, but I was on Twitter. Okay,
Big Bucks. Spider story. Are you gonna? Yeah, okay, the spider story. Okay. I was gonna just say that.
Okay, so Big Bucks Noemi. He posted a picture of this fucking gigantic spider, like on his arm. Like I was like, what the fuck? So I am deathly afraid of spiders, and the reason why. Okay, so I was dating this chick back in Roanoke, probably about 15 years ago. We're at her house, and there is this, you know, pretty large spider above her door. Above her front door. So, you know, back then, like, I wasn't afraid to, like, kill spiders. Nowadays, I, like, call my mother to come over and tell her to kill this fucking spider. I mean, that's how fucking deathly afraid I am of fucking spiders. And there's this, you know, pretty large spider. Its stomach looks a little bigger than it should. I was like, what the fuck's wrong with this motherfucker's stomach? Did it eat too much? Too many flies? So I get my shoe and I smashed it. And you ever seen that LeBron James, you know, at the beginning of the game where he gets all that chalk and splashes that shit in the air? That's exactly what happened with the spider, except it was a million spider babies. Oh, literally, man. 10 million spider babies. Like it looked like the cloud that LeBron puts when he has that chalk. You just use that chalk. It was fucking spider babies that just flew all over the whole fucking house. It wasn't just one. It like sprayed like 25 feet, like all around the edges. Like shit got in my hair. Like I literally screamed, ran outside, and just left. Like I just got in my car, left. The girl was still there. One of the reasons why I broke up. She's like, "What the fuck did you call me?" "What the fuck?" I was like, "I ain't fucking going in there. There's like 10 million spiders in your house. I'm out. I don't love you that much. Peace." And we broke up like 2 weeks later because I would never go to her house again. Because I was like, there's 10,000 spider babies living in your house right now. I am not coming the fuck over. And so, yeah, we broke up a couple weeks later. But so that's my spider story. So if you see a spider with a stomach that looks a little bigger than it should be, do not fucking kill it. Just pick it up and drive, put it in your car in like a bag and drive hundreds of miles away and then let it go and then drive back home. Do not kill big bellied spiders because you will get a LeBron James cloud of spider fucking monsters that just come all over you. That's my word of wisdom for the week. All right, let's get to this. Let's get to this listener league. Square grouper, delicious fish, 411.5 points. Brooks Koepka, 76.5 points, finished in fourth, of course. 21% owned. Hideki, 8% owned, 55 points. Had a nice little comeback on Sunday. Finished in third. He did bogey like 17, which again, cost me in cash. Oh, no, I didn't have him in cash. I had him in GBP. Cost me in GBPs. Paul Casey, 23.71% owned. His Saturday and Sunday cost me in cash because he played pretty damn well over the weekend, and you do have to love him for this week. Usti, who everyone loved, 22% owned, 89 points. Second place, Shane Lowry, who, again, another guy in my cash lineup that fucked me on Sunday. 8 over par on fucking Sunday, 39 points, 22.5. I think Brendan Steele, Brendan Steele had like 27 points and he missed the cut. Lowry had 39 and he played all 4 days. So there you go. Harris English, whoa. I mean, I thought he was going to win at one point in time. Like, everyone's just going to fuck up and Harris is going to win this shit. 3.53% owned, 79 points finished in third, won a cool $900,000 for his third place finish. Campbell, what'd you think?
Yeah, I like the lineup quite a bit. The Lowry chalk was one that did not come through, as you mentioned. The guy like Steele that didn't even make the cut ended up putting up some points, and a guy like Lowry did not. So that surprised me. He'd been coming in pretty solid. He had, you know, the game for the course. Definitely thought that. The rest of it was pretty solid. Couple guys there under 10%, Matsuyama and English. I really wish I played more English. He did show some signs coming in. We know he's got a complete game. He wasn't going to make a lot of mistakes. It really did make a lot of sense. So I like that play the most, and clearly nobody else did because he was 3.5%. So got to give a shout out to Square Grouper. We'll see him added into the Tournament of Champions tournament, and I've got him geared up for that. You're going to get him in the three man this week. Got to give some shout outs though. Some other guys, man, T-Fed, my guy, he's been following for a while. Always good to chat with him and see him up there. He shouted us out on Twitter and said he did his thing this week, but couldn't quite take this one down. Record 62. This was probably the least of his damn worries, winning $150, because he won the 44-44 for $1 million and a Tournament of Champions ticket to get in that. He's been grinding the streets for a long time. So shout out to Record 62. That was awesome to see. USC Biggie, Discount Belichick, some fans. And then we always see them up here. And then our guy Burnt Reynolds is back in the top seven again. So he's already in the Tournament of Champions. A lot of the same guys. And by the way, thanks to everyone. We almost got there. 991 entries out of 1,000. Of course, DraftKings steps in and covers it off anyway. So sometimes we kind of cheer for that overlay in a sense. If they put it out late, we'll give them shit and cheer for the overlay. But other than that, we do got to thank them. They lowered the rake. They upped the size. They allowed for it to happen, balanced the structure. All good there. Any other thoughts on that, Kenny?
Here's the thing. Maybe in a little bit of time, we're going to be able to fill those larger listener leagues. We'll see. Stay tuned, DJ Nation.
Ooh, teaser. He's giving out the teaser alert. There's some big, big news coming.
Stay tuned, DJ Nation. USC Biggie, always big fan. Yes. Took me to his golf course. In one, really nice guy. Played at some Crown Royals. Played shitty golf. Club out there, and I think it was the I think they played the 1963 PGA championship there or some shit like that. I think Jack Nicklaus won, so yeah. So I was nice, played like shit afterwards at these nice little fire pits, some cocktails, good times. So if I'll see you there again, USC Biggie. All right, so let's get to the course. This week, finally, right? I mean, like 45 minutes into the podcast, we're back into this week. Hopefully, you guys don't want to hear me, you know, lauding about spiders and white tuna again. You went ahead and skipped the beginning of the part. That's what that 30-second skip button is for. Just skip, 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 skip. All right, so let's get to this week. The PGA Tour moves to Cromwell, Connecticut for the Travelers Championship from TPC River Highlands. Feel pretty strong because it's a week after a major. In the previous years, only two golfers finished highly at the U.S. Open and went on to win the following week here. And those are Chaz in 2019, who finished third at Pebble, and Freddie Jakobsen, who finished 14th at Congo in 2011 before his win. Hey, there could be some merit to avoiding players in the field who were in contention at the U.S. Open last week due to the grinding nature of the event. But it's so difficult to tell who's going to be affected. I'm putting that narrative on the back burner for the most part. Normally, this course is in favor of just long hitters, as seen by a playoff in 2010 between, you know, Bubba, who hits a long, Corey Pavin, super short, Scott Verplank, average, Ken Duke fucking won here, Russell Knox, Chez, you know, Furyk had a 58 here, and then you got, like, DJ, and you have Bubba, and you got, you know, all the larger guys who could bomb it out there. Now, with the influx of elite golfers in the field, most of which are long off the tee, we could see a lot more bombers on top of the leaderboard than usual. This doesn't mean short hitters can't contend. You know, just last week we saw five quote unquote short hitters crack the top 15 at Long Torrey Pines. But with all the stars in the field, it's more likely that stud golfers will be on top of the leaderboard come Sunday, especially considering this course is exactly a cakewalk, given how short it is. It's usually like mid teens under par that wins here. So, you know, even though it's like 800 yards, you're not going to see like, you know, 25 under par unless, you know, conditions are really, really dry or Bryson goes fucking ham. If the court, you know, so now even with that being said, I think that this course is still a second shot course. So you sort of if you want, and I got no problem with that. And looking at golf, seven shots should be a good way to go. If you're hitters, I focus on golfers who are good from 125 to 150. If you're looking at average proximity from 150 to 175. Also, in, you know, green and regulation stats. You know, saying combine that in with the stroke with the strokes gained approach out there. One other thing about this event is that most of the time the morning wave has a little bit of advantage due to softer conditions and slightly smoother greens. The heat can take out the greens in the POA, and the POA in the greens can make for a bumpy road in the afternoon, but this isn't exactly West Coast POA, but it's still not going to be as smooth as it would be if you played in the morning. This is something to think about when making first round leader bets or showdown plays. A couple of things before we get to the course. Four of the last eight winners of the Travelers are coming into the week off missed cuts in their previous starts. Five of the last seven winners had posted at least a top 30 in a previous year at TPC River Highlands prior to winning. All right, so TPC River Highlands is a 6,841-yard par 70 Pete Dye redesigned course with two par fives and four par threes. The par 5-6 is the longest of the two par fives, but will still be reachable by the big hitters. The par 5 13th, much shorter. Almost all the golfers will be able to reach in two. The par 4 15th is very short, so we're going to see some guys going for the green on that one. All three of these holes have close to a 40% birdie percentage. If golfers par any of these holes, they'll be losing strokes to the field. As being a par 70 course, par 4 play will be the most important, with the previous winners all doing well on the 48 par 4s for the week. Golfers will see average size fairways that get substantially more narrow after 300-yard mark off the tee. Bunkers and trees will be in play if they miss the short grass. These fairways are some of the easiest to hit on tour, as nearly 70% of all tee shots find the fairway. But as we saw with Bubba winning a few years ago, he only hit 50% of fairways and won. So you can get away with missing these fairways if you're long as hell. If golfers do miss a fairway, the first cut rough, not too bad and playable. But the further the golfer misses the fairway by, the thicker and taller the rough is going to get. So like if they get behind the fans, that's where the rough is a little bit thicker, especially since they're not going to be, you know, trampled down like where the fans are going to be standing. And in front of the fans, it's usually first cut, so that's not that bad. Unlike other events with tall, thick rough, the greens at TPC River Highland are softer and more receptive, so it won't be a total disaster if golfers miss the fairway. And since the course is so short, they should be hitting their approaches with a short iron. The greens are slightly below average in size, except in the long par three holes with a bit of slope, and a lot of them are elevated and crowned along the edges. Not too much undulation to the greens, but they usually put the pin in a place where there is some slope, so they don't have golfers shooting minus 30 for the week if conditions are soft. They also put pin locations in very close proximity to the edge of the greens, so golfers can have tricky chip shots if they short side themselves. Scrambling from the rough is actually pretty difficult here. Top 10 hardest courses annually on tour when it comes to chipping from the rough. Even though the greens are small, nearly 67% of approach shots still find the greens at TPC River Highlands, which is above average on tour. So even with the previous stat about scrambling, I wouldn't put too much emphasis on the short game outside of putting. If golfers miss the green, they will have to deal with collection areas, thick rough, water, and numerous bunkers. The greens use a blend of POA and bent grass and are above average in speed with a stint meter rating of around 11.5. Water in play around five holes. A big pond around 15, 16, and 17. Tambo, what are you looking for this week?
A lot of what you were already talking about, I think, just to keep it short and sweet, move on to the plays. But I do think approach game, you mentioned, like just in general, this is typically a birdie fest, not maybe your 30 under type stuff that we're used to. But if, you know, what was Jim Furyk threw up a 58 here, didn't he? Like there's a lot of 63s, 62s. There's numbers out there to be had. So birdies, big deal, you know, ball striking in general. And then this field is strong. But I do wonder, Kenny, your thoughts just to kick it off here on some of these guys coming off this big major, right? It's how it always used to be. But like you look back at a guy like Bryson, who I know you like this week, when this was the last three times off of like a, I think it was a 36th, the 25th, and a missed cut. But then he came out here and finished 6th, 8th, and 9th in the after those U.S. Open when it was the normal setup. Well, like we're back
last year. Last year wasn't a U.S. Open before. So
no, when DJ won, of course, because that's what I'm saying. But now we're back to the normal schedule where it's held after the U.S. Open. And yep. Bryson came off, just coming off another T26, I believe. And so it was T36, he came sixth. T25th, he came eighth. Like, it still feels like they get, you know, certain guys at least feel rejuvenated enough to come out and get this done here and just get another win under their belt. What are your thoughts on that with some of these guys at the top coming off the U.S. Open?
I mean, we saw Reavie do it in 2019. He finished third, went insane, but Pebble was more suited to his game anyways.
Yeah.
And he came out here, went from Pebble to here and finished and won the event. I mean, I'm not looking at it too much. I mean, here's the thing. Yeah, let's just go straight to the tiers here. We got Reed all the way to DJ. And let's start with Bryson and Koepka this week. If they get paired together, I'll probably go Koepka. If they're not paired together, I'm going to go Bryson. I think that's the way I'm going about it this week. I think Koepka's just more of a bulldog mentality when it comes down to it. And Bryson might just try too hard. You know what I'm saying? If they're paired together. And I think what you're talking about, I think it could happen this week. If not, I'm going Bryson up there. And I like Patrick Cantlay as well. And I'm not worrying too much about last week. These guys are pros. It's a week that they played. I mean, it's not like they were like, I don't know. I'm not looking too much into it.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm with you. I don't even care what groups they're in. I do think that could happen, but you know, to account for mind games in my model and things like that, it's tough. So I'm in on Bryson with you. Like, we just rattled off his results, what he's been doing. He definitely still cares. It was one bad back nine at a back nine that everyone blew up at. So the fact that, like I said, he's come off when this is set up as normal, as we're getting back to normal now, because last time I believe this was after the RBC Heritage, to my previous mentioned point, is that you've got a guy like Bryson who's already come off these majors and done his thing here. So I don't think he's gonna be too rattled by any means off that, you know, one setup. Hopefully that makes people not like him for some reason, but I do like him. I like DJ. I think we saw some signs. That's why we kind of like DJ last week. Still okay with him, as sort of, as you know, no one really wanted to go with him at the top, and he didn't do his thing, but it wasn't like he was completely out of it. I mean, he could have made his run on Sunday himself. He just didn't. So why not go back to him here? He just won here, you know, when it was held recently. So I think that's, you know, the two guys I like the most. And then the other guy that stands out for me is Cantlay. Looking at his results here, just in the past, stats wise, of course, we know what he is. Look across the board. He, you know, had a pretty good week at the US Open, 15th, and then 11th and 15th and 15th the last three times he's played here. So if you like, you know, if you like Cantlay, I do. I think you can go back to him here. Definitely had a nice Sunday too, a 2-under Sunday when many were struggling out on the course. So I think he's fine to go back to as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm playing either Bryson or Koepka. I'm picking one of those two, and I'm playing Cantlay. I'm doing the same thing with you this week. Let's move to the 9K range. I'll go two of my cash game cornerstones. First off is Paul Casey. I think a win can happen here. I actually bet him at fucking 18-1. You can call me fucking crazy. But I think I got a feeling about him, and I got a feeling about Finau week also. But Casey's going to be in one of my first cash game cornerstone. His record here, pretty damn good. I mean, if you look back, four top fives in his last six appearances here. It's not like he can't win. He won earlier this year in Europe, but he won. So I like his upside here. I think he'll do fine. He played pretty well on the weekend on a tough course last week. Iron game, of course, always strong. Hits a ton of greens. You know, good with his shorter iron. So I'm in on Casey, and I'm going to Chalk Donkey this week. I'm going to Kevin Streelman. The thing is, his price might be too much for a lot of people, but if you actually look at his numbers, I mean, he's been one of the best, basically, ball strikers in this field in the last 2 months. Strokes gained tee to green in his last seven events, 5.4 at the U.S. Open, which is pretty damn good, 8.1 Memorial, 3.3 at Schwab, 6.7 at the PGA. And you see those, he finished 15th at the U.S. Open, 13th at Memorial, 8th at the PGA. Those are big boy fields. And he's getting up there. He did say that the back nine is his favorite nine whole stretch on any course in the world. Makes sense, because when he won here a few years ago, he birdied seven of the nine on the back to win. So that makes a lot of sense. You know, and he finished 4.7 in the Wells Fargo. So in the last five events, dude's been averaging, I don't know, 5.6 strokes tee to green, 3.3 strokes with his approach. I can't get off of that. I mean, even at that price tag, which seems crazy for Kevin Streelman, I'll use him in chalk and I'll be light on GBPs. Finau, I don't know. He's missed the last couple of cuts here. No one's going to be on him. I think people will be on him.
I do.
I think you get him low. I don't. You think so?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Maybe they won't be as high, but I don't think Streelman, just because of his course history, will be as popular as you think. When you have Casey, Scheffler, Finau, Anser, Neiman, everybody in this range, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, but Streelman's out playing all of them.
Except for sure, but people like even the coverage doesn't like Streelman. Like DFS players rarely like him, and especially not at 9,400. They like him at 7,300, 7,500, all those prices. So I definitely think Casey. I think Scheffler just did his thing in a major. That's going to get talked up here soon. And then you've got Anser, who everyone always plays. Neiman, always a darling. Like these Finau, no matter what Finau does, he gets ownership. He's like X at a major. It just doesn't matter.
Maybe. I think this week you can finally get him in low ownership.
Hopefully.
I'm thinking like 12%. You
people
know,
just love going back to the well, though. So he was 27% or something in one of the tournaments I looked at today for last week, one of the higher dollar single entries I looked at, but I think it was still pretty high in the other.
Well, it's a major. It made sense in a major. The guy had 12 top 10s and 17 his last 17 events at major championships. I mean, it just made sense. At this event, he has two straight missed cuts.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, maybe we can get him a little bit of a lower ownership and we can take advantage of that.
Hopefully. I'm with you because I like, as soon as you said that, he's a guy I like for, I think this 9K range could make noise here with, I know that there's all those great names up top, but I think there's still win equity in this range where guys, like you said, already Casey, Scheffler's been knocking on doors. I think he could take something out. Streelman, like you said, gets no love. Like I said, even from, I think it was the PGA Championship when he was like chance to get into contention and they wouldn't even go to a shot from him because it's Streelman, who cares? But he contends in these types of events all the time. So I think that's a spot. And then, like I said, you've got all those guys at the bottom. I don't know if you want to talk about Matthew Wolf, you know, being back or what you, if you will, because Sunday certainly didn't look like it, but hey, it was good to see him back out there doing his thing on the course. I just think when you've got guys like Finau, Anser, Neiman, Bubba at 8,900 and down, we can get into the next range, but there's a lot of guys in this range that you can play.
I mean, how nice is it for Matt Wolf? I think Joe Iadone, Torpix at Torpix on Twitter, great guy. He's the one that hosted the DFS Open with Ryan Baroff. He was talking about how nice it is for like a guy to be able to just take 2 months off work because mentally he's just fatigued. Don't you all wish we could do that at some point in time? I wish I could take 2 months off work. That'd be great. I can't afford that shit, but he's won on tours looking at $1 million. He was able to do that. Good for him. Getting back mentally, it's a smart move. A lot of people wouldn't do it. They just grind it out and then they could just, you know, lose themselves. So pretty smart move by Matthew Wolf coming back over there. And of course, my man Gup on Wednesday, on his podcast that I was on, talking about, you know, he heard some shit that Matthew Wolf, this is the week. I mean, he's back and he's mentally fresh. Gup was saying all these things that the fucking broadcasters were saying before the event started. And then, of course, and I had 10% of them going when I went to bed on Wednesday night. And, of course, the late start, I start tinkering at work. I'm like, man, I just don't believe in Matthew Wolf. Just got rid of all of them. And that shit fucking sucked. Even though, I mean, he still scored pretty well. I mean, he had a shit ton of birdies out there. I think he was like second or third behind Rory, I think at one point in time. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going to play him this week. But, I mean, good for him to be back mentally and right. Hopefully you can see him around for another while. This is just a little hiccup that he had to go through. Let's move to the 8K range. Third cash game cornerstone. I'm going with another chalk donkey this week. Probably it's going to be Brian Harman. I just, you know, his course form here, he's been playing good golf. If you look at his iron game here recently, I mean, it's real strong. Second shot course, 4.6 gain at the U.S. Open, 3.7 gained at Charles Schwab, 3 gained in the PGA. And even though he missed that cut, he's got, let me count how many, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seven top 20s in like his last 12 events. Pretty solid run. Good form here. I'm going to go with him because the other guys around this thing, they have question marks, you know, like Abe's coming off back-to-back missed cuts. Neiman, I'm not sure if this course fits him. We haven't seen him, you know, finish really high here a lot. Bubba, who I like in GPPs, is just boom or bust. I can't really go with that, even though that's sort of the way I've been going in cash. It's just a little bit too volatile for me. Finau missed 2 cuts in a row. Matthew Wolf, missed 2 cuts here. He's missing a lot of cuts, more cuts on tour than he has all season. Matthew Wolf, mentally, we don't know where he's at. Scheffler, I can't really fit Scheffler, Casey, and Streelman all in one lineup, especially in a week where the bottom of the field is a lot weaker. So, I mean, it just sort of the way my roster construction was going in cash, I want three guys that I think have a good chance of winning or at least top fiving. And I think Harmon has that opportunity in that range. He might be a little bit safer to play. I might be going back a little bit to my old way of thought, but he's been playing good golf and he has a lot of top finishes here recently. So I got no problem going with him as my third cash game cornerstone. Of course, I talked about Bubba as well. Hit or miss. You play him and just hope it's one of those hit weeks because he's won this tournament three times. It's a Bubba track. You play Bubba on Bubba tracks. Siwoo, another Pete Dye course. You always play Siwoo on Pete Dye courses. Harris English coming in. This course seems like it would fit more than Torrey, and you finish fucking third at Torrey. So I don't see a problem with that. Who do you like?
Yeah, this range feels, I was going to say, it kind of reminds me of the Palmetto a couple weeks ago where, but that was so much worse. Like that week, it was Harold Varner, Luke List, and Vincent Whaley chalk week. And clearly that did not go well for anyone, myself included in some cases on some of those guys. But I just would say like that's, this one doesn't feel as bad. Like if you look in, like it's Casey Streelman we talked about, maybe Finau does come in a little lower owned. So that's fine. If he does, great. But then like Harmon, you don't feel bad about, and English, all these guys that you think would be a little bit popular. Henley, off of another good week. We didn't talk about him earlier, but he was pretty good through three rounds at least. And wasn't completely
good.
Yeah. He was good. So I would say that I do like the two in the middle there, squeezed between Henley English and Harmon. I like Hoffman. Didn't really do his thing last week as everyone expected. He still made the cut at 7,200 and he was chalk for sure. And one of the ones that didn't really get there, kind of like a Lowry point where he put up, I think it was 42 points or something, but I'll go back to him here. 8,600 is a small bump. The field is still good, but it's not the same as last week. So I don't hate that. Doesn't have the worst track record here. Before the last couple events was obviously playing much better, but I think this could be a bounce back spot. And then definitely Siwoo on Pete Dye. I think people will catch on some to that, but it definitely has been a real thing. So it's something I'm happy to go back to there. And then I don't know, man, Adam Scott, he just killed me last week too, but you know, he did his classic top 35 thing, but again, the world's toughest field, super tough major course, major venue. If he can just keep some momentum, this is now one of the events that is not going to have the strength of field that, even though it's good and better than something like the Palmetto, it's still not the strongest field where if he actually does show up, I think he could be an interesting play right at 8,000 there at the bottom.
All right. So let's move to the 7K range. This is where I'm going a little bit against the chalk. I feel like Doc's going to be chalk. And I feel like, you know, with his last performance out there, but he's so up and down that if he's like 20% owned, it's an easy fade for me. Molinari is one guy I'm keen this week. He showed me some shit last week, finishing 13th of the U.S. Open. His game could be rounding back into a little bit of form. So I'll go with Frankie Baby. Tringali, the darling from the beginning of the year, sort of been let down the last couple of weeks. I think I can get back on him on a course that I think really suits his game. Kevin Na, the guy at this price, he can just win. This guy just wins out the blue. I like him at this week as like a GPP flyer. My final cash game cornerstone might be a little bit chalky. It's Emiliano Grillo. This is, again, like another course where, he finished second at the Heritage, which was another Pete Dye event. This is good for him. I mean, the guy is just, it's going to happen at some point in time. He's had a couple of top 10 finishes in his last five or six events. Of course, everyone knows iron game, greens in regulation, good on short par fours, good with his short wedges. I mean, everything seems like it's going to work out. And in this type of field, which is pretty weak on the bottom, he's above average in putting for the field. Over his last 50 rounds, not saying much when you look at the bottom half of this board, but still. So my cash game cornerstone this week: Paul Casey 9,900, Kevin Streelman at 9,400, Brian Harmon at 8,800, and Emiliano Grillo at 7,300. Another guy I like at 7,300. Stewie Sink won at Harbortown, another Pete Dye course. The guy's been having the season of his life, and he's $7,300. I'm in. Give me Stewie. Give me some Stewie. I'll be playing Guido. I'm in. Sky, home, who works with Mayo on FTN. I those guys, they just love Guido, and I fell in love with them on the weekend. On Sunday, the guy was just, he's just so excited to play the game, that passion. You know, it's that Italian passion. And right now I have my hands like, you know, folded up and I'm doing the Italian shit. You know, like when they talk like that, I'm doing that shit. I feel I'm actually watching Gomorrah on HBO, if you ever see that. So that could be another reason why I'm like Italy obsessed right now with like gangsters in Italy. And I feel like Guido could be like a gangster from Italy coming in and taking it down. So I'm in on Guido this week. Go ahead. Who do you like?
I like our guy at the top. I don't know if you're going to go back to him or not, but Keegan Bradley's pretty good. I feel like he'll pick up ownership. That's the only thing I worry about. But other than that, it's hard not to like him. Before the miscut, it was 17th, 18th, 2nd, and 4th. Everyone loved him. He let them down. They priced him at 7,900 for some reason. I don't understand that. So maybe avoid him in some high-dollar single-entry stuff if you want to be different there. But I really do like him still. I like going back to Higo now. I know he won and then disappointed, but now he comes back to another event where he can just go out freely and do his thing. Probably a better setup. I think this would be a good spot. I like Guido to that point as well, who you just mentioned. But Homa, he has no good history here. It's horrible. But the price just seems bad. $7,800. He was $7,300 last week in a much stronger field. It's barely a boost for a guy that is boom or bust, but this is what we want. So in tournaments like this, large field stuff, I'm going to go back to him. Tringali, you mentioned. Kevin Na will always play him at this price. You and I both like him, and we know what his win record is. I think it's like the last 45 events, he has 4 wins or something like that. So he's winning 10% of the time, basically. It's definitely a possibility, and at 7,500, he certainly can fit into your lineups. Back to Varner. If people don't want to play him now, I'd rather play him when he's not complete chalk. Ian Poulter reminds me of that. And this is just keying in on the idea. You didn't hear me mention a bunch of names up at the top, really. There's, you know, 3 in there in the top range, 3 in the 9K that I like that I mentioned, and go from there. But it's because I really am with you, Kenny. There's guys you can play at the bottom of this field, but I kind of like keying in on this zone here. Lanto, 35th last week, showed some shit. He's back, and he's just over 7K. I don't care about the rule. If you average out this field strength with where his price is, it's kind of like he's under 7K. He just shows up at 7,400, but that's fine. I'll go back to him. Chris Kirk, 7,300. We played a lot of him this season. Not going to be a guy I shy away from based on, again, I'm avoiding a lot of the normal, well, he did this the last 5 years and blah, 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 and all this stuff, because, you know, coming off, we're getting back into the normal swing of things here. We're coming back off the US Open. Guys are ready to go, and some guys played in it, some guys didn't. You have all these factors that I'm just playing the guys I want. I'll tell you what, though, Kenny, Emiliano Grillo, gotta love him in the models, right? The stats pop, everything's good. I think Chris Kirk could be a really nice pivot there, and I'll tell you why, and this is the scary part, but you mentioned earlier, like, they're hitting, what, almost 70% of greens, you said here, 67% greens in regulation, I think you said. So Emiliano Grillo, last 50 rounds, first in greens and regulation. The second stat you mentioned, though, was how difficult it is around the greens and from the rough around the greens and that. So if he's not hitting those greens this week, he's almost dead last in the field for around the green game. So that really does worry me, especially when it feels like he's going to come in with some high ownership. And his finishes here are what, 60th, 60th, 19th, and 43rd? I don't know. He worries me a little bit, especially if he's coming in at high ownership this week.
I feel like this is his type of course, though. What he did at Harbortown, he's coming in a couple of top tens in his last few events, playing good golf. I'm in on him, and I expect him to hit these greens, so I don't have to worry about the short game.
That's right. What everybody says. That's what they hope. Yeah. I'll give you another pivot.
Misses the greens, I like Sink as the pivot. I like Sink. I think Sink is the best pivot off of Grillo.
Now there's more, though. Wait for the one more guy at 7,300. Hashtag girl dad announcement today.
Oh, I'm in.
Valor week?
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in on Fowler at that price with his new swing, with nappy factor on the way. We saw a little bit of nappy factor work last week with John Rahm. I'm in too.
I like it. I'm going back. Like I said, I'd rather just try him on. I don't know. I can never get behind Grillo anymore. Like, I just don't. So I get it. But at the same time, like I said, you mentioned Sink. I'm actually not against that. I like Kirk. I like Fowler. I like a bunch of guys there that I can play. Guido's just below. Who else did I have down here? One more guy. Carlos Ortiz. I think he's been doing some things lately too. And I was going to say, I think people wanted to make him work last week, and it just didn't happen. Again, not the best.
I was one of those guys.
Yeah, it's, I get it, though. It was not, like I said, I don't think it was a bad play. It just didn't happen. But before that, his results have been pretty good. Making cuts, that's what we want. And a guy that I talk about all the time with guys like him and Munoz and those guys that where Sam Burns is another one who we skipped over, I think. But these guys, it's just, again, it's boom or bust. But in Max Homa, Cameron Davis, what I normally talk about, if they make the cut, you're not looking at a guy that just comes T58 by the end of the week. Usually, if they make the cut, they end up finding some upside. Taylor Gooch, another guy we'll talk about. I just think these guys, he's right at 7,000. I like playing guys like that. What about Kyle Stanley, Chez Reavy there at the bottom? Because Kyle Stanley had been getting a lot of love before this. And I know we're not going to talk a bunch about the 6K range anyway, so we'll just breeze through that. But Kyle Stanley and Chez Reavy, got to talk about them. Chez Reavy's kind of on a similar run that he's been coming up to. I know it wasn't the best finish, but you got to think it doesn't show up in anybody's recent form. But to win that Q, to then come 14th, to then, you know, 40th isn't that bad at a U.S. Open. It's not really his setup. So what about coming back to here? Got to feel pretty good for him. Don't you think he could be in play there down at the bottom?
I'm in on Kyle Stanley, I think. I don't know about Chez. I haven't really looked at him that much this week. Let me take a peek real quick. So, of course, he's a former winner here, and we've seen multiple time winners at this event. The guy's iron game has been really strong, so maybe.
He's only missed one cut in the last seven tries here, including a win. So, at this price, we don't need him to go out and win again for us. That's just an added bonus if we get that, but I like the form coming in, and I don't think a 40th last week scares me away because it's really not the setup, in my opinion. So I think, as most would agree, that I can go back to Chez. And then Stanley, we'll see what the ownership does there. He's another guy. He's very Grillo-esque, where it's, his irons, there's wedges, and then his greens are solid, but his around the green game and stuff like that is not the best. So I don't know if I'll be in there. And then Taylor Gooch is my boomer bust guy there at the 7,000 price as well.
All right, let's get to the 6K range. I do like a couple of people, especially up top. Lipscomb, good performance in the Palmetto. Asian guy, go Asians. I'll go with him. You know, he's been pretty good on the European tour. Not bad out there. So I'll give him a shot. Will the Thrill Gordon bombing it out there? Boom or bust. I know Sundog Monkey is on this week at like 200-1. Fuck it, I'll run. Sundog Martin had a hell of a week last week.
He did. Congrats to him. Rom. That was awesome.
With Rom as his outright and what's it called? Grace each way. We'll ride the heater with Sundog, with Martin over there. I'll go with a little Willie G down there. I like Norlander. I think he's a guy who's going to be very, very low owned. I feel like his game fits this, especially with his shorter irons. One of the best in the field. Hits a lot of greens. Iron game, of course, strong. Other guys down here. Lebiota, Hank the Tank. Give me a little Hank the Tank. Four straight cuts. Top 25 in green regulations. Top last 50 events. Top 20 in bogey avoidance. Last 50 events in this field. Give me a little bit of Hank the Tank. Ryan Armour. This is Ryan Armour's type of course. I think he had a pretty good outing a few weeks ago on a lot longer course, which usually isn't his shit. Usually he likes some short thing. Oh, Palmetto. So I'll go a little Ryan Armour down here. Again, I'm going to tell fucking Martin again, Chase Seifert, $6,700. Fucking ride him. Go check out his Twitter, at Sundog Monkey. Dude's been on fire. I'll go with little Chase Seifert down there, a little action on him. Outside of that, then we start to slow down a little bit. Not the biggest fan of too many other golfers down below that range. I mean, I'm going to have to find some. So we'll see as the week goes on. Maybe a little bit of Satoshi Kodaira, who had a little nice little comeback after missing like 8,700 cuts in a row. He won out of the blue a few years ago. I think I was at a Pete Dye course, if I'm not mistaken. So I'll go a little
over Siwoo Kim in the playoff.
I'll go a little Asian brethren right there. Didn't Luke Donald have like a top 20 here, top 20 recently on some tour? I mean, fuck it. We're going down to the depths down here. What did he finish? 13th in the Byron, made two straight cuts in a row. 3 out of 4. Guy has decent form up in this piece. This game seems like this is the type of field and this is the type of course that maybe he can get down on. So give me a little bit of him. Oh, man. Down below, Davis Thompson, maybe. Young guy. That's probably about it.
Yeah. Now you're just naming all the guys you're not even probably going to play. So we'll flip it over. If you're still listening to this hard hitting analysis, let me give you Hadwin, Sloan, and Nick Taylor. Go Canadians. Let's go. We got, you know, go Asians, go Canadians. Is that what we're going to do?
All Asians, all Canadians in a six carriage, pay them all.
No, also I do like
Gligich. I can't say
Michael Gligich. Yeah, that's another one.
Oh, Canada. Play them all.
One thing I will say, you slid this in and didn't even know you said it, but in a week when you can't play Will Zalatoris, a little Willie Z, play a little Willie G, our boy Sundog Monkey, like you said. I like that call. Will Gordon, third here last year. I like him. I like, if you want course history, I don't really normally, but I kind of think he's good anyway. I'm underpriced, is Ryan Moore at 6,800. I think he's a good play down here. I didn't even get to Sundog stuff today. I had a busy day, but if he likes Chase Seifert, that's good, because I had him marked up as well. And then I just went and looked, and he's actually had a couple good results here. A ninth place, coming off a 35th. I think he's good. I've heard a little bit of talk about Tom Hoagie. Always like his upside. He fits the bill. Him and Mark Hubbard are two dudes that fit. And Hank Lebioda are the same model I was talking about earlier, where they can just show up and have upside. And the last guy I'll bring up is just, are we going back on the Vincent Whaley train? He only really went off the rails for a second there. Like, can he hop right back on and get us a top 30?
I don't know, man. Usually when guys like that go on a run and they miss a cut, we saw with Norlander. Like, he went on that crazy run, missed a cut, and we haven't heard from his ass since. I'm hoping this is the week he comes back. But those type of players, once they start going down, it usually spirals. So we'll see. We'll see. Right. I'm probably not going to play him. Sung Kang. John Park. I'm just going to name every fucking Asian on the motherfucking board down here. Who else we got? Asians. Those are it, I think that. Oh, Michael Kim, fuck it. Play Michael Kim. Don't play.
Oh, no, do not do that.
Don't play Michael Kim. Please don't play all the Asians except Michael Kim. Sorry, Mike. Yes.
Poor right. Michael Kim is going to be the title of this. All right. Asian persuasion and poor Michael Kim.
I think the title should be LeBron James Cloud of Spiders. I like that title.
We got to get this thing over with. Go to the bets.
All right, let's go to bets. Bets. This week, I got Casey, 18-1. Finau, just a feeling, 28-1. English, 50-1. Fowler, 70-1. Grillo, 95-1. Stewie Cink, 100-1.
And I got just absolute garbage here that I picked up late today. So I only got Fowler at 60. I got Answer Neiman, who I talked about earlier, 28 and 35. And then I bet Guido way after people already got him, just because why not? And it was 110-1, but I know people got him at 200. So it's just a terrible number. But then you just put more money in case it actually happens. That's the way I always do it, straight to Jen.
All right, 1-9, Guido. Fuck it.
I've got some good luck lately just picking whoever I've got left. And this week, I think I'll just press the button on Casey and hope that he shows up. So, Yeah, that's
I'm not really playing Grillo. Grillo, Casey, Streelman. I'm playing one of those dudes. I'm out of it now. I literally sucked that. And I had Rom at the Memorial. So that should really fucking kill me. So there we go. All right. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. And you can find me at GupsCorner.com. My article is out every week. It is already out. So go ahead and check that out. It is course preview, trends, stats to look for. And then Wednesday I'll have, if I adjust my cash and cornerstones, which I normally don't, it'll be on there. My favorite GPP plays in every price range and my final betting card. So check it out at GupsCorner.com. Tambo.
Yep. Find me on Twitter at Toteg and Tambo. Hit me up there if you got any questions. Rotogrinders.com. Do all my work over there. You guys can go to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself $10 off the first month. Got the Tuesday night show with Noto and STL Cards. Wednesday night, we'll have a special guest on going through lineup HQ, actually building out our lineups, where we talked a lot about what we were doing there last week, and this almost came to fruition. So hopefully we get some wins out there this week. And other than that, hope that you guys just have a good week and wish you good luck.
Oh yeah, I forgot I'm on the Stripe Show podcast on Tuesday. So check that out. They have Gary Williams from the Golf Channel today. Brandel Chamblee the day after me. And then Phil Kenyon, who's Rory's fucking putting coach on Thursday. And then me on Tuesday. I don't know why I'm on there, though. Check it out. Stripes Chill Podcast. All right, guys. Well, I don't even have much to say. Let's just win some motherfucking money, DJ Nation.